Good afternoon. Today is Monday, April the 21st, 120th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the Bank Dude, Mr. Dalby. Hey, guy.
It is a joy to be here with you today, Brian.
You practice these all month long, don't you?
Yeah,
the passion.
How many Pinocchios?
Coming off of the weekend.
How many Pinocchios do I get for that?
Yeah, about, 9, 10 inches on that one.
Ouch.
You watch much TV?
Not a lot.
With the Geico ad with Pinocchio?
I have missed that one.
Oh, it looks like a room of losers, and he's supposed to be a motivational speaker, and he says, I can tell this group has got potential. You're reading about the same general style and pacing as you had. And
wow.
Yeah, he's knocking people out with his nose.
Was I insulted?
I think I'm just pointing things out.
Okay, that's all. I appreciate that.
Well, neither of us know yet what the program's going to be, so we'll find out what a topic is, and then we'll be back.
Major manufacturers and warehouses clearance of new 2014 inventory, Friday through Sunday. Redwood Acres Fairgrounds, Eureka. Over 100 spas on display and everything must go. All inventory 40 to 80% off. Trade-ins welcome. Free delivery. We'll even haul away your old spa. Worry-free installation.
Spas starting at $29.95.
Save thousands on the Revolutionary Swim Spa.
See the Revolutionary Swim Spa in action and save up to 60%.
Exercise with low impact.
Swim the entire year and stay in shape.
Teach your kids to swim.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with a bank dude, Mr. Dalby. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from
Nietzsche.
F.W. Nietzsche.
Excuse me.
I may as well give him his just desserts.
What's the quote, Brian?
Here it comes. Hold a true friend with both your hands.
Around the neck?
Around the neck, yes. I was looking one for insurance, since that seems to be on everybody's mind these days.
Insurance?
I couldn't find one, though. At least not one worthy of repeating or remembering. So I guess we all just try to do what we can do. That's all right.
Yeah, I can hear right. The radio's turning off.
At least you're not driving and lost at the same time.
Been there.
What are some of the requirements that the bank has for being publicly traded?
Well, it's a good question. First of all, I'll point out that we are the only publicly traded company based in Humboldt County. And you have a perplexed look on your face.
Well, I'm going through the first tier. Okay. Huh. And Humboldt Redwoods obviously is not based out of Humboldt County.
Correct.
Is that the one that normally trips people up?
No. You stop and think about it and you go, well, yeah. All the big companies.
Lots of representatives or representations.
Everything here, that's publicly traded is based somewhere else. Anyway, so small trivia question or trivia fact for you. But your question was, what does it take to be publicly traded? For financial institutions, are a little different ball game. Our bank.
What a stunner that is. Yeah, okay.
Our bank charter serves as the appropriate authorization to issue stock and so forth. If we weren't a bank, we would have had gone through the SEC or appropriate agencies in order to get licensed to do that. So it's a little bit different for a bank. It's actually harder to go through the bank charter process than it is to become a publicly traded company. But when you go through that process, you don't have to go through the SEC to
become publicly traded. So it does make it a little bit easier on the end run for you.
It's one step we didn't have to take.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the same thought.
I think it's about the only one we didn't have to take. But it was a long, difficult process to get a charter.
Well, we hear an awful lot about anticipated earnings estimates, about the PR machines getting, aftermarket closing news releases on a Friday afternoon and all this kind of positioning to, I would presume, either hold value or to increase value with the PR side of the ledger. I just was wondering, what are some of, well, we don't hear an awful lot about that from any of the, from most of the companies who are in our area. I don't think I've ever seen a press release that says Redwood Capital anticipates earnings of X, Y, Z, or dividends being declared of, and doing that a week or two in advance, and then prices shift, and then here comes John, and he's there at the press conference, and smiling as only he can do, and he says, "Hi, everybody, I'm really glad to be here." And then we hear whatever it is, and then the fluctuation either not happening because you hit those numbers, or happening because either they're exceeded or they're not achieved. But you hear that in with association with most other publicly traded entities. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of curious, as they're talking about a couple more companies not hitting their numbers being released today, we don't hear that from you guys.
We don't. First of all, we're not an SEC a registrant. So we're not, we're at a lower, there's many levels of publicly traded. And so you have SEC registrants, then you have the NASDAQ, you know, and then you have, we're over the counter because of the size and the number of shares that we have outstanding. And so as we grow, we'll start moving up that ladder. But right now we're at one of the lower tiers. We don't forecast forward, and the reason for that is insider trading is a huge issue with all publicly traded companies. And so if an insider has information and they trade the stock, they could be using inside information and so forth. So it's very, very difficult or challenging to make sure that you're not violating any insider trading rules. Now, with that said,
because the board owns stock?
Well, no, it could be anybody who has inside information. It could
anybody
be
anybody who's a buddy of a buddy of a buddy.
Well, it could be a consultant who's doing work and knows our, you know, some financial information, good or bad, prior to being released publicly. And so, what we do is we simply keep everything quiet until we go out with an actual earnings release, and we do that once a quarter.
KINS News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the bank dude, John Dalby. So, John, when the stocks come out, I know that there are games that are played with a PR in association with the stock in many situations. If you're going down, you know it's going to be undervalued or it's overvalued now. You start hedging. Okay, and you can do that. That's why these guys have the PR firms. That makes sense. And the same going the other direction. Is a stock price, I know this is going to sound really stupid, but is the stock price really that critical to a company?
Okay. You know, that is a really interesting question because if, you know, to use our company as an example, if our stock price, which it closed today at $9.15, if our stock price was $3 or if it was $20, fundamentally it changes nothing in the operation of the company.
The day-to-day.
Right. But the stock price, you know, does change the return for the shareholders if you were to buy today. So if you were to buy today at $9, your return would be greater than if you were to buy today at $20. That's intuitive. So you're correct that it doesn't really impact the operations, the profitability of the company. But as not only am I the CEO, but I'm also on the board of directors, I work for the shareholders and I have a fiduciary responsibility to maximize their wealth. And so that's who I work for. And share price impacts my shareholders. So it is very important to us from that aspect.
That would be a job security issue?
Well, yeah.
For one person on the board, yeah.
Yeah.
Does it impact, I mean, when I think of stock prices and that kind of stuff for the big boys, I think of opportunity to access funding for various projects. Debt retirement, expansion, purchasing new equipment, things of that nature. It's another pool of dollars that are available if needed. Fair thought?
Okay. What you're talking about is what are the advantages of having your stock price high?
Or the raw number of stocks available.
Okay.
Large.
So I can't just produce shares and sell them. Okay. So I have to go through a process in order to do that. And so what you're talking about is access to additional capital if you wanted it.
Capital infusion, yeah.
Correct. Okay. Now, you have to look at, there are advantages to having a higher stock price in that when you go to the market for additional capital, you're not diluting the value of your existing shareholders. And that's what happened with a lot of banks across the country. They were forced to raise capital during the recession, is they had to dilute the value of their current shareholders. Our board has done everything we can to avoid doing that. And to date, we have never diluted our shareholders. And our intention is, if possible, that we never will. With an offering that is sold at a level which would be dilutive.
Nice word.
There you go.
Dilutive, yes. Stock splits.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one mechanism to get to that point?
No. A stock split doesn't do anything to increase capital to the company.
But it brings the stock in at a half price value, right?
Correct. Theoretically, if it was a...
Let's go with Berkshire Hathaway so we can say hundreds of thousands per share. Yeah.
If you have a 2-to-1 stock split, then what you're doing is instead of having 10 shares, I now have 20, and theoretically they're of half the value.
Allowing more to access into the market.
Correct. And the reason you do that is a couple fold, but the biggest reason is if your stock price gets too high, in order to buy a block, a minimum block, you have to have a higher investment. And so by splitting the stock, you allow other people that wouldn't otherwise be able to access it. The other advantage to a stock split is oftentimes you split the stock and it doesn't decrease by 50%.
Maybe by a third.
By some other number, in essence, creating shareholder value.
But shareholder value has nothing to do with access to financing for the company.
No.
Completely different. Side argument.
Exactly.
So how do the big boys get access to capital? I mean, if you've got stocks of value of X billion or trillion dollars and you need capital.
Now, we need to define the term capital.
Revenue for expansion.
Okay. Cash for, if we're using the word capital, because capital can mean simply the money, like a down payment to do something. So if it's just cash, they can borrow it. They can go to the market and sell additional shares of their stock. There's a number of ways to do it.
And they can share the additional shares of stock because they haven't released everything that they've been authorized to?
Correct. Most companies are authorized for huge numbers of shares and have only issued a small number. That's the norm. And that's so that you can always go out for additional capital if you need to. So the big boys can get it by either borrowing. You can also do preferred shares. There's a number of different ways that you can get it other than selling common stock.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Introducing Tapas and Tinis in the Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino. Spring is here, so on your way home from the beach, come check out the sunset. Restaurant doors will be opening an hour earlier, offering a small plate, tapas, menu available at a discounted price from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Signature martinis will be reduced to $7, and happy hour also applies with dollar-off drafts and wells. Also, make sure to check out the new spring menu for an amazing dinner, available starting at 5 p.m. daily. The Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino, just off the 101 in Trinidad.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this very afternoon with John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. You said real estate. You're starting to see interest in purchase, commercial and residential, more inquiries, more asks for money. What's going on out there? I mean, tis the season, but
yeah, we've seen some ups and downs in purchase money transactions in real estate. So people that are borrowing money to purchase a new home, or purchase not a new home, but a home new to them. And it's been down for a while, and now we're seeing a pretty sharp rise in the number of purchase money transactions, which tells me that the real estate market's heating up. That's a real positive sign for us.
First-time home buyer price category, the mega monster, let's say 3,650 square foot homes or higher. What's moving? What categories, or is it geographic?
For the most part, we're seeing first-time home buyers, lower end purchases, a few upper ends, but they're getting really, really good deals on them. So the upper end homes are not appraising out as are selling for what normally would be their value.
So when one of the larger homes now comes available, I know you guys look at the current market value and go, yeah, okay, fine, and grind the numbers. Okay. Is part of that an allowance to say, this thing was worth, and it will be back to being worth, and either reduce the risk. So you go, okay, if they make it for 4 years, yeah, this is going to be a really good investment for the bank as well as for the individuals.
No, we can't speculate at all on the value of a home.
So if it comes
up
in
or down.
So if it's a foreclosure and somebody buys it at 10% of market value, you guys don't drool to get that kind of a note?
No, not because it was a foreclosure, but okay. Yes.
Or purchase price being way, way, way below market value.
Yeah. No, of course, what that does is it sets the new market value. It becomes a comp for the next sale or
does
next
it?
Appraisal.
I
yes.
Mean, something that is really that abnormal in the market?
That's how prices go down.
That's how it gets factored in, really. So if we're just starting to process through some of those foreclosures now, that'll keep housing prices low, even though it's just onesies, twosies?
Your assumption is that foreclosures are sold at substantially less than their value. That's the assumption in your question.
Below their purchase price or the note price.
But you have to, it doesn't matter okay. What it was worth. Is what it's worth today. So if a house that was one time worth $400,000 is now worth $200,000.
Well, make it go for $100. Okay, I mean, it's just
Let's do 50%, so it's easy to do the math. So they may have owed $300,000. They bought it for $4,000. They owed $3,000. That was foreclosed on, and it's worth $2,000. Okay, if it sells for $2,000, it's sold at market. Okay, so
even though it's not.
So it doesn't matter what it was worth at the time it was purchased.
So the foreclosure market is perceived as normal real estate market?
Correct.
I thought that there were pros and aces that just bought foreclosed homes and knew the game.
No, at foreclosure.
At foreclosure, yes.
So let's walk through the process. Brian stops making his payments on his home. And so the bank sends them a number of notices, and we go through a process. And finally, it goes to sale at the courthouse steps. At that point in time, the lender will be there to make, as the credit bidder, will make a bid based on what they're owed. Okay? So let's say you owe $300,000 and the house is worth $2,000. Okay? I believe, as the lender, that I can sell that house for $180,000 net of my commissions and everything. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to bid $180,000. If the house is worth $200,000, will you have a possibility of buying it at foreclosure for less than what I'm willing? So point being is that there's a small margin there, not enough to make money on.
But you can set it for the price that is remaining on the note.
So, but let's take it to an extreme. So I foreclose on Brian's house. It's worth $200,000, but you only owe me $100,000. So now I go to foreclosure. Okay. If I bid more than my $100,000, and there's any secondary liens, I then have to pay those secondary liens. So anything that is in excess of what's owed the first goes to subsequent lender or subsequent lenders, correct. And so I'm only going to bid my $100,000. That's where you have some opportunities. So,
but who attends those foreclosures? I would suggest the regular guy doesn't go there.
No, because you have to have cash.
Yeah. So how does that impact the general market when you're saying
it doesn't
one time special super duper duper?
No, but you're getting confused.
Okay.
That's where I'm saying if you purchase in foreclosure, that's different than purchasing a foreclosure.
Gotcha.
So if the bank foreclosed on it, it's now marketed as a piece of real estate through a real estate agent, just like anything else. It's just that it's owned by a bank, not by someone else.
But if it's purchased at foreclosure, that's
a whole different ballgame.
Guys are able to come in,
get a real screaming
turn
deal.
It around, make it happy, and the house value is more reflective of what the marketplace
Correct.
Is rather than a tough financial for one party.
Now, sometimes a bank is anxious to get rid of a foreclosed property, and they'll sell it at less than market simply to get it off their books. That does happen.
KINS, News and Information Times, 342. We'll be back with more from John Dalby.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 346. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with John Dalby. So, John, there seems to be increased interest now in getting back into real estate. Has the market held its breath long enough and now it's gasping? Are there all of a sudden these low-end properties that are available? Are these drug house conversions that are now coming back out on the market? Foreclosures that are dropping the prices down so that homes that previously weren't affordable now are? What's behind this thing?
I'm not an expert in this, so I'm speculating.
And you stayed at home last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But this appears to be demand-driven as opposed to supply-driven, because there's a substantial supply out there. There's plenty of homes. There's more homes available than there are people buying them. And so if you see an uptick in, you know, this is my speculation, if you see an uptick in the number of purchase money transactions, that means you have more people that are willing to buy, because there is no shortage at this point.
Is the purchase price moving, or is it just being transacted, I guess would be the term?
First, you're going to see the increase in purchase money transactions, but as they increase the number of transactions, then you're going to see prices start to rise. And it's going to be a modest rise. I don't see any big spike in housing prices.
3-5% kind of thing?
If that.
Okay. That's not modest. That's a pleasant surprise.
Any growth would be a pleasant surprise.
Exactly.
Right.
But as you had indicated, this is one of the primary indicators of economic viability. So where's the demand coming from? Renters?
Well, that's the thing that has driven every recovery until this one. This is the only recovery that, and of course it's an anemic recovery, but it hasn't been led by consumer housing. Every other recovery we've had has been because there has been an increase in consumer housing. We're not seeing that in this particular recovery. And so I think that's one of the reasons it's very anemic.
So again, where's the demand coming from?
Well, it'll be renters, yes. Renters.
Just renters converting to homeowners?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're not seeing a big influx of people coming for jobs in Humboldt County.
Well, that's what I was saying. So wouldn't that then be driving down the rental market? And if it's driving down the rental market, wouldn't that snuff out the flame of people getting into the owner market?
I mean, if it was a material number of people, but the number of people buying is not significant enough.
You're relatively kind of intrigued.
Right. So, okay. What you got to remember, what we've seen is we've seen rents go up, but prices on real estate stay low. Okay, that's perfect for investors. And we're going to start to see that equalize a little bit. So, you know, it's possible we'll see rents come down slightly over time.
$100 a month, $150 bucks a month, that kind of thing?
I have no idea. Yeah. About.
Well, I know, but I thought I might be able to draw you out a little bit.
Yeah, I could speculate and lie to you. Get some more Pinocchios.
That's right. And it has been fun to have you here, too. We've been Talking Shop with John Dalby. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love, and I'll see you tomorrow.